Welcome back, everyone. My name is Greg, and welcome to the podcast, My First Season. In this podcast, I interview people who worked in holiday slash ski resorts, hotels, and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. My next guest and I have not worked together before. She is originally from Montreal and now resides in sunny Newfoundland. She is the co-founder and administrator of the largest XGO group on Facebook with over 7,400 members, and it's called the Official Club Med XGO Facebook group. Everyone, please help me welcome, you know her, you love her, GA. Hey, GA, how are you?
Hey, Greg, how's it going?
Oh, so happy you're here because I virtually know almost nothing about you or your first season. So it's nice to talk to someone that I, you know, first of all, a female voice and that someone I don't really know and have never worked with. So I can't wait for your stories. In your pre-interview yesterday, you gave me such a funny story about your first time, but I'm just kidding. There's no pre-interview. You know, I'm not a talk show. I was just kidding. But you did mention something I can't wait to hear. Okay. about your origin story and how it all started. So if you don't mind, if you can just take me back to like where you were living and what you were doing for work before you found out about Club Med.
Sure. I was a very young and green 18 years old. My parents had just moved to Ontario from Montreal, which meant that I had to return to high school because Ontario had a grade 13 and we did not in Quebec. So I was unimpressed by that plan. So as soon as I turned 18, I moved back to Montreal and got a full-time job. I was working at Hantel Cellular, which is Rogers today.
wait, back up a sec. Did you say you moved here at 18 on your own?
I did. I moved back to Montreal at 18, yeah.
Okay, wow. And not many 18-year-olds were doing that at that time, I'm guessing.
No, well, I really didn't want to be living in Ontario. I'm a Montrealer, you know, through and through, and certainly didn't want to go back to high school another year after I had been accepted to all the stage-ups of my choice, but I was not 18 when my parents moved, so my father was very insistent upon my moving with them.
Okay, and what year round was this?
I graduated high school in Quebec in 1985, so this would have been in 87, 88 by the time I actually turned 18 and made the move.
And were cell phones still large back then, or were they starting to shrink? I can't remember.
No, they were gigantic. Okay. I had a portable cell phone that weighed 1,000 pounds and had to have a handle to hold it because it was so
that's hard. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We see these in all the 80s movies and it's a massive chunk of plastic with a black kind of antenna, right?
No, it was even bigger than that.
Oh boy. Okay. All right. Okay. So you're in Montreal, you're working, you're young. So
I am.
How did you find out about Club
Well,
Med?
About Club Med, I had a vacation time. And of course I wanted to go somewhere, but all of my friends were in school, right?
Yes.
It must have been a travel agent or something. Anyway, somebody said, you know, go to Club Med, you'll be safe as a single woman.
Oh boy.
Yeah. but you know, it won't be, you'll get to meet people. It'll be an easy place to talk to other people. It won't be boring. So I took the advice and I booked a week's vacation at Club Med Les Boupigny in La Martinique.
In 87?
In 88.
88. Okay. Martinique in 88. Okay. I can't wait for this story. Go on.
So I did. I booked the trip in 88, but I actually traveled in the beginning of 1989. And so I went.
Could I interject here 1 second? So had you ever gone to a resort before on vacation?
No, my goodness. No, not at all.
So you knew absolutely nothing like what to expect. You didn't know about the themes or what the day to day is like. Okay. This is going to be
definitely not very green. Had no idea what to expect, what was going on, what would happen.
Can't wait.
So I went for a week and I arrived and it was amazing. Of course, you know, the GO team greets you. I'm the same age as them, somewhat younger in some cases.
Yeah.
And I discovered quickly the tour, La Tour, they called it, the bar that was there where there was a young guy, his name escapes me, I think it's Devin. He was Canadian and he was in charge of all the Canadians that week. And every day we would meet at 5 o'clock Tower Bar and have happy hour and that kind of thing. So it allowed me to really meet a ton of people. And then I started, you know, getting involved and doing everything. I was going to the beach every day and learning to windsurf. And then I participated in the GM show. I was part of the, it was the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And I played one of the leading ladies in that.
Okay, wait. Because I did Rocky Horror my first season as well. But was this as a GM show they did Rocky Horror? Or you
they
were actually
did.
In the,
it,
oh, they did?
Yeah, no, it was as a GM show.
They put on
show, yeah.
A GM show, Rocky Horror. Wow, kudos to that animation team.
Yes, yeah, it was a fun experience. That's
Never heard of that happening before for a GM show anyway.
Yeah, no, it was a full, it was all GMs, you could tell.
So what kind of charters were there? Were there also a New York charter that went there?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
Oh boy. And so did they arm New Yorkers with toilet paper rolls and then you did the show at midnight?
They were brave enough to do so, yes.
Okay, got it. Go on.
And this is back in the day when they had the, they called it the American Beach and the European Beach.
Oh, yes. So, yes.
Right? The American Beach had lots of loud music and kegs of beer, and the European Beach was far quieter and full of topless ladies.
Yes. And men wearing bathing suits that made them look like piggy banks, I'm guessing, right?
Indeed.
Barely there, should have been there. Okay, got it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I had a wonderful week. I met a bunch of great people. And then at the end of the week, I was doing, you know, the regular, it was time for me to go. So I was had my luggage all ready and I was about to board the bus to go back to the airport to take my charter home to Montreal. And all the GOs are lined up and clapping hands like they normally do. You know, to say goodbye. And at the front of the line by the door of the bus is the chief of village. And this particular chief of village asked to see my plane ticket. Now, I've never traveled anywhere really without my parents. I don't know, you know, a whole lot of what's going on. So it was odd, an odd request because he didn't seem to have asked anybody else. But so I gave it to him and he said, great, thank you. And he ripped it in half. You have to bear in mind that this is 1989, which means it's not an e-ticket. If he rips my plane ticket in half, I cannot travel.
Yeah, just a question. Okay, so this actually happened. Okay.
Oh yes.
Okay, so I think I don't think that's ever happened to anyone, but if it happened to me in my 10 years of flying, I'd probably be upset. My first gut reaction would be upset. So what was your first gut reaction when someone...
I was upset, yes, because I thought, oh my goodness, this is, you know, I can't afford to stay another week. What is happening? Okay.
Are you able to say this chief's name, or you'd rather not? I mean, if he was a positive influence, then you could say his name, but if you don't want to, it's okay. I'm just curious.
I'm happy to, and he loves to tell the story. It's one of his favorite.
All right, I'm dying to know who this is.
Pierre Letellier Gagnon.
Ah, yeah, of course. Okay.
One of the first French Canadians.
That's right. If anyone's gonna rip your ticket, it's gonna be a Canadian. Okay, go on.
Exactly. Okay. So he rips my ticket in half, and I'm in panic mode. And he says, no, you need to stay. You should be a GO. You have to stay. So
he didn't ask you if you had a job waiting for you or a fiance. Okay, this is good. Okay.
Nothing. The fact that I had an apartment.
Yes, this is getting better and better, this story.
Seemed to be irrelevant. So I didn't have a choice. I had to stay at the very least another week because, you know, that's how long it was going to take to get the ticket and, you know, renewed and all that stuff. So I did stay for, you know, I called my roommate and in the telephone room. And
a couple hundred dollars later, because it's Martin.
Exactly.
In Montreal. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Fortunately, my roommate was also a colleague, so she was able to handle both the apartment and job all at the same time. Basically, I said, listen, I'm going to stay an extra couple of weeks. You know, I can't commit to this. I don't even know what's happening. So I stayed for a couple of weeks and then, you know, flew home, got rid of everything, you know, did the proper departure from my job and my apartment and that kind of thing. And, you know, called the Club Med office and God bless Boo Boo. All I could hear was papers shuffling on his desk.
Wait a minute. Can I interject here? So, okay. So before you went to Montreal, what kind of job did they give you?
I was windsurfing, which is hysterical.
Because didn't you say you learned to windsurf there?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get back to the winds. Cause I'm a windsurfer. We'll get back to the windsurfing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but are you saying that you still had to apply even though Pierre?
No, not at all. No, I just went home.
Okay.
And they already had where I was going next. I didn't know where it was.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, I thought you were going back to Martinique. So are you
saying
you stayed
the
rest of the
season?
No,
I only stayed a few weeks in Martinique and then I did my first real season, I guess.
Okay, I see. So you so you go back home. The chief asks you to contact Montreal, and then obviously they've got a report about you from Pierre, I'm assuming.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And Boubou, who was in charge of all the sports instructors at the time, he was known for being a little lost occasionally. So it took him some time to shuffle the papers.
Is that why he was called Boubou, or was that his
nickname? That was his nickname, yeah.
Okay, Boubou. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Which also means an error in French, I guess, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. Okay. Boubou is when you get hurt.
Yes, when you get hurt or you, I guess, make a mistake.
Exactly, or you make a mistake, yeah.
Okay.
But he was Boubou, not Boubou.
Okay.
slight difference.
Yeah, there's a difference.
But anyway, so he contacts me and says, okay, I don't have anything for sports team, which honestly was good because it's not like I was a windsurfing instructor by any means. And he said, I send you as hostess. I send you to Paradise Island. I was like, great. Sounds great. Don't know where it is. Perfect, though. I ended up doing 14 months in Paradise Island.
Okay, so let me go back to Marnik. So obviously when you were there, you know, for the week as a GM, you were seeing the hours they worked and no days off. So did you handle that okay when you actually had to start working there in Martin?
I did. It really didn't, it didn't faze me. It never bothered me. I don't know if, you know, part of that might have been that in high school, I actually went to boarding school, which meant, you know, school hours were normal, but in order to stay busy, we did all kinds of extra stuff and we lived there. We never went home at the end of the day. So that kind of lifestyle wasn't overly surprising or shocking to me, I guess.
Okay. You were a windsurf geo in Martinique. They're sending you to Paradise as a hostess, but were you not allowed or able to ask, like, what did you really want to do? Because you saw what people were doing in the resort. So when you went home to Montreal, did you have a design? Like, what did you actually want to do in the village?
I honestly didn't want to, I didn't have a request. I just wanted to go to a village.
Okay. All right. Wow. Okay. So technically, Paradise Island would be your first official season, because I don't think anyone else has a story like you where you go as a GM and the chief of village rips up your plane ticket. I haven't heard of that. And I've seen GMs go on vacation and later on come back as GO, but nothing like your story. All right. So they send you to Paradise. And now what year are we in now?
Oh, it's still 1989.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. This is some story and we're just getting started. All right. So hostess, would you explain to people who might not know what that entails?
Sure. Hostess, I guess, was the front desk of back in the day. We had, you know, access to all the master key to all the rooms. We sold the bar beads, which were required to purchase alcohol at the bar. And we had all the beach towels and reservations for the annex restaurants. And then over and above that, during restaurant hours, we would be the ones who greeted you at the restaurant and then sat you, you know, brought you to your table. And we would, you know, always, of course, this is 1989. So it was always questions like smoking, non-smoking, single, couple, that kind of thing.
Yes. And how many male GOs asked you to be seated at a table with only beautiful young women? I'm sure you got
exactly.
That a lot. Yeah. Trying to bribe you with some bar beads. The shame on them.
Yes.
All right. So did you have a nickname at all? Or what did you have on your badge? What name did you have on your badge?
Glenda Ann was the name on my badge. It wasn't until a couple of seasons in.
Yes.
That there was another young girl that came from Venezuela and her name was Glenda. So the chief of village at that time, Howard McCarley, was like, well, we can't have two. So you'll just be GA. But then my name tag changed to GA, which is what I'm known for in Club Med. And then, of course, with the guests, with the GMs, it became like, oh, we know what a GO is, but what's a GA?
Yes, I'm going to ask you, so how many acronyms, funny acronyms, did you hear? What was the best one? I mean, I could imagine one or two.
Oh, so yeah. The usual one from the American guests was Georgia. They assumed I was Georgia. But one of my favorite ones was Great Asset.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah, because... So you show up with a GA on your badge, you're just a target, really, for
exactly.
I guess to think up clever names or acronyms for those letters. Okay.
Well, especially because in Paradise Island, after doing 6 months as a hostess, the chief of village that was there at the time, the chief of animation that was there at the time, E.T., who became Meti, chef de village, wanted me to become the animator. I did. I became an animator for 6 months. I was the
wait
first.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I can't. Yeah. Okay.
I know.
I've never heard anything like this. All right. So you didn't even ask. So you're a hostess and you're approached to be the animator.
Yeah. First okay. female animator in Club Med history.
Wow. Did not know that. Okay. What made him, because I don't know you that well, what made him think that you could do that job?
I think just my personality around the village, the way the GMs interacted with me, the way I, you know, what I did in shows and things like that.
So you didn't even have the chance to look around and see what you wanted to do. You were approached to be the animator and you said, yes, I'm.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was okay. A challenge. It was, you know, I was making history. It was going to be exciting. And, you know, so E.T. had a lot of faith in me at the time. So
you'd only really had been to Martinique and Paradise Island. So how did you think up your passages, you know, those things that you do during the day, the crazy,
the crazy, silly things. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'd seen a bit of what had happened throughout the season, and kind of had my own creative ideas, and then changed some to adapt to the fact that I was a woman. I mean, it's pretty hysterical when a guy dresses as a girl. Not so funny when a girl dresses as a guy, right?
Well, it's true. I've never seen a female animator in my 10 years in Club Med. Yeah. So I couldn't say.
It was a challenge for sure. And it's why I only did it for 6 months, because it was extremely difficult. And the demand for me to be funnier than any other animator was high. So I did find it a little stressful, but I don't regret the experience. I had a great time.
So did you have to do like coffee games at the entrance of the restaurant after lunch and all that?
Yeah. Restaurant entrances to restaurant, coffee games, the whole thing, presenting the shows, all that good stuff.
Wow, this is incredible. Okay, I'm still reeling from the plane ticket being torn up. Okay, now finding out, yeah, you were the first female. Wow, okay. So you stayed at Paradise for how long again?
It ended up being 14 months while I was there, the Gulf War broke out. And that's when they changed from 6 months to a year for changing geos from one village to another.
Okay.
And so I kind of was in the middle of beginning of that. Eventually got sent to Playa Blanca in like their season had started, I think, in November, and I arrived in January.
Okay. In your time at Paradise, were there any memorable guests? I'm not talking celebrities right now. I'm just talking like GMs. Were there any?
Oh, most definitely.
Okay.
there was a couple.
Yes.
From Atlanta, and they were getting married in the village that week. They were super excited about it. I happened to meet the bride kind of at cocktails before dinner, chatting with her, and you know, and I said, oh my goodness, you know, who are your bridesmaids, like who's your maid of honor and your you know, best man? And she said, I don't have a maid of honor. And so I jokingly said I would do it, and then all of a sudden I was her maid of honor. And then the best man was the cab driver who took them from the airport to the village.
Oh boy.
I threw a full-on bachelorette party and had some of the male duos. I bribed them with alcohol, and
I'm sure they didn't mind too much.
No, they had a great time.
I never did. Okay.
And so they did a little, you know, striptease thing for us, and we had a grand old time. And then, you know, she actually went out and bought not a full dress, but part of my outfit, and certainly she had me wear a flower wreath in my hair, and I was, you know, most definitely the maid of honor at this ceremony for a woman I'd known 5 minutes.
Who married them?
It was a local reverend.
Okay. And they did it on the beach, I guess, or in that rotunda? That rotunda was still there?
Yeah, well, they did it in the classical music area, which is kind of trees. Yeah.
Yes. So did you ever get to go, not that you had a day off, but did you ever get to go outside the resort to Nassau?
I did occasionally. We didn't have days off back in the day, but we would certainly sneak out late at night to go to the Merv Griffin Casino long before it was Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this. Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Atlantis just became a behemoth and took over.
Yes. Yeah. Atlantis purchased them years after my time there. But
were you allowed in the casino back then?
We were. Okay. We got away with it because they don't think they realized that we lived and worked in the Bahamas. We didn't look Bahamian per se.
Okay. Well, there was a rule in Club Med in 2003 that GOs couldn't go. Obviously, some circumvented it. So I was just curious if when that rule started. So not your season then, you were allowed
to. Oh, definitely not my season. In fact, there were concerns for some of the GOs on the team because they were spending all of their salary at the casino.
Yes. Yeah, because GOs in general, you know, I've met so many GOs and I've worked with them that have done 6 months. They go to the gestion to get their pay. They're thanked for their season. And the gestion says, you owe us $490. So they spent.
See, back in the day, we had the blacklist.
Yes. Yes.
If we spent more than we earned, you were blacklisted and that kind of thing. So that you couldn't get money out or spend anything or sign for anything in the boutique or all that good stuff.
But now you're right next to a casino. So I can imagine the temptation for some.
Exactly. In fact, there was a very wealthy Bahamian man who used to come in all the time. He was a friend of Brian, the photographer's. I forget the gentleman's name, but he, as a Bahamian, was not allowed to gamble, right? They're not allowed to gamble in casinos on their islands. So he would bring, you know, some of us, some GOs, and we would go to the casino with him and he'd give us the money and we would gamble his money. And he'd, you know, give us some of it and some of the winnings if we won, and he would keep the rest.
And how did you do at the tables?
I wasn't fantastic. I had a good time. Okay. Free drinks were...
What was your game? 5-card, 21? What'd you play?
No, roulette, actually. Roulette. I enjoy roulette. Oh, okay. 17 red.
Oh, really? Okay. Did it ever come up?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's a tough call. I would have went just for the color, but okay. Probably would have been a big payday if you'd hit on 17 red, depending how much.
It would have been, yes, yeah.
Wow, okay. So he staked you guys. He was like, yeah, here, go.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, he just enjoyed being in the casino and the, you know, the excitement of gambling and stuff. And he wasn't a spring chicken, so he had a bunch of, you know, young GO girls around him and that kind of thing. I think he enjoyed that too.
Did you, going, so speaking of Martinique and Paradise Island, did you experience any kind of culture shock, I guess, being amongst Europeans for the first time? Did you have any kind of?
Probably not as much as others, being from Montreal and French being my first language and having French family. Also, you know, growing up, the whole, I know the topless thing was pretty shocking to a lot of people, but yes. I remember one of my friends in elementary school, her mom was Dutch, and she was often topless in the backyard. It never, so I wasn't overly shocked, I guess, when I got there going, okay.
Well, I sure was my first season. Okay. And it was a GO that I had met was talking to me and I didn't know what to do. So yeah, that was uncomfortable for me. Okay. So did you have any problem participating in the shows? You liked doing the shows?
I loved the shows. It was definitely one of my favorite parts.
Did you love midnight rehearsals?
Not quite as much. Okay. Although I did enjoy it somewhat because it was one of the few times that the GO team could be alone without GMs and just hang out and, you know, talk and have their guard down a little bit.
Get so yelled that at part by was the fun. French choreographer because you're horsing around, or that maybe that
yeah. So yeah, one of my favorite French choreographers is Laurent Olivier, and he used to say all the time, "Stop to eat the French fry. You get too fat for costume." And he was talking to every girl. Didn't matter. She could be the skinniest girl in the village.
Yikes.
The typical French choreographer.
Yeah. Not too appropriate today, but it was a different time back then.
Yes. Yeah. So super inappropriate today. We would rehearse like Janet Jackson's Miss You Much for 2 hours. And he'd say, "Okay, Miss You Much. Thank you very much. You were terrible."
Perfect. Scott, you're making me miss it even more now. Okay. French choreographers were the best. They just had that, came with that attitude, you know, and just always.
Although Graham
it.
Maxwell, the Canadian choreographer, could rehearse you to death, but his shows were spectacular.
I mean, just the demeanor of the French choreographer was excellent. They never let you off the hook. They always let you have it, you know.
Big time. They were not.
They pushed you, but man, when they pushed you and if you responded, it turned out to be a great show.
Exactly. I guess the one culture shock thing I did have in Paradise Island was one of the first shows I was in. The costumière was a little, a very tiny, slender, beautiful woman from France named Coco. And she had brought me backstage for my costume fitting. Well, it was one of those French Parisian feather shows. Basically, the costume is a full body skin toned fishnet, right? That covers nothing really, but it covers the whole body, but it doesn't hide any. And so then I remember her getting on her knees and kind of pulling out the area near my crotch area and just starting to sew paillettes. Like just starting to sew the glitter in the space. So she sewed a little triangle and then she, you know, stood up and told me to put my shoulders back and then sewed little stars where my breasts were. And I was like, what is happening?
Aren't they supposed to do that on like the dummy that they have backstage? Like they put the
No, well, because it had to fit my body specifically, she was doing it on us. Like each person was being sewn on individually. And then, you know, a lot of it seemed like little to no coverage, really. But then when you get all the feathers hanging out of everywhere, it covered enough to be okay. But I remember being shocked by that for sure.
Yeah, who wouldn't? Did you learn any skills while you were there besides the windsurfing?
Yes, I became a rescue diver eventually.
Now we are Patty.
Yeah, Patty.
Patty, okay.
Certified
in open water one, or you just went straight to the rescue diver?
Certified in open water one.
And that you also got in the resort, or you did that before? Okay.
No, I had no experience diving at all until Club Med.
Okay.
And then, of course, learning other languages, right? I came in with French and English, but I eventually learned to speak Spanish and Portuguese, Italian, you know, some Dutch, some Japanese, that kind of thing.
You've already given us so many stories. So I want to ask you, is there one funny story that really like clean, appropriate story that stands out in your mind from either Martinique or could have been, I don't know, something that happened when you went on an excursion, something crazy or showing a guest a room. I mean, do you have anything from either Paradise?
I do. It's one of my favorite stories from Paradise Island. The first 6 months of my stay there when I was still a hostess, the chief of village was Eric Perronet, a great chief of village, and he was doing a James Bond type show. And I don't know if you ever did Paradise Island, but the theater, surrounding the theater, there's kind of like the balconies.
Yes.
Right?
It's like a second floor, right? Yeah.
On the second floor, exactly. And so, of course, the chef de village was James Bond, and he's dressed in his tux, and he had a safety belt on. Not a comfortable. An actual safety because he was attached to a rope.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And he was going to jump off the balcony.
Oh boy! All right. Okay.
And the sports team was tasked with ensuring that he did not hit the ground when he jumped off the second floor balcony. So you know he's ready. He's waiting for his cue, and he's all pumped and ready to go. And the sports team is holding onto the rope, but they're kind of all chatting with each other. And they miss the cue, and he jumps off and slams into the floor. And so then they hear that sound and yank the rope, and our unconscious chief of village in a beautiful tuxedo is dangling from the rope in front of everyone. Fortunately, he was not seriously injured. Otherwise, it wouldn't be funny. It was hysterical at the time.
That's very definition of the phrase, you had one job to do. Mm-hmm. And of all people, you let it happen to the chief of village. Wow.
Yeah.
So was he, when he jumped, was he standing on like that railing? And then?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was kind of, he had kind of moved over to the other side of it. Okay. He was holding, you know, with the back of his hand sort of thing until he was ready to jump.
Did he fall flat or did he land feet then rolled or something? Like, cause I'm trying to picture, did he dive or did he just jump?
He was diving because he was supposed to be kind of like almost like a flying over type thing.
So that might have saved him from broken ankles. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Although
it could have shattered a whole lot more. He was very, very lucky.
When were those sports geos fired the next day?
No, but I'm sure they thought they were going to be.
I can't believe no one talked him out of that. I can't believe he didn't like triple check this thing. Okay. Wow. That's crazy.
They had done it before properly. Just that particular moment, the sports geos were so used to doing it every, you know, week or so that they were chattering and not paying attention to the cue.
It's funny because not one person paid attention. I'm sure there had to have been at least five on that rope. So it's really, you know.
Oh yeah, no, there
that,
was
that many people missed the same cue. Is like, wow.
Well, I think what happened is like, you know, three of the five or whatever missed the cue. And
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Two couldn't hold them. Which is why he didn't.
The skinny archery geos were the ones on the rope, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes, because all the other, you know, all the strapping handsome ones were in the show.
That's right. So yeah, I left the archery geo and the compressor. Okay.
Exactly.
Was there anything about, we know what you loved about it. Was there anything you didn't like about the job, whether it was village or I don't know, besides rehearsal, late rehearsal?
Clearly you didn't like rehearsal. I liked rehearsal.
I loved rehearsal. I always wished it was, because it's so funny that, you know, if you think about it, it's a definition of insanity. You're trying to learn intricate dance steps at midnight after you just had a day from hell. Okay. You're tired. You're your head's in your bed, your body's on stage, and dancing, you know, came easier to me after the years. But you're trying to learn a very, you know, depending on the choreographer who wanted to prove something, you had to learn very intricate dance tips when you just worked, you know, 15 hours. So that's the problem. The rehearsal was in the afternoon, which I always said it would be amazing, but that's the thing. You love the shows, but oh God, rehearsal, you know. But that's what I always found humorous. You're trying to make me learn something when I can barely speak, you know.
See, I'm a night owl. I was fine with rehearsals at night. I didn't care.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So you probably liked everything then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Village was boring mostly. Yeah. That was, you know, that was boring. I, you know, eventually as the years went on, there was things like when I was in Asia, there'd be 5 a.m. departures every morning. And so we had to do like 2 of those a week. Those were less fun.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
I'm guessing you like Crazy Signs.
I did. Yes, I was one of those.
Okay, a favorite or top three?
Ironically, Hands Up, I think, because of the geos would get into it and we would get creative with it. So that one was a fun one. The other one is Au Bal Masqué.
Oh boy.
Is no longer done. That's the original Crazy Signs story.
Okay.
Right? The whole, where are they? Here they are. All that. And in later years, I would say Muévelo.
Okay. Another one from Muévelo. So did you ever have a French chief of village make you do La Bonne Franquette on Elegant Night?
And just, oh, yes.
Like over
yes.
and over again.
My
and
least
and
favorite.
You're sweating. It's like 90 in the tropics. And okay. Yeah.
That one and the duck dance. Hated those.
The what dance?
The duck dance.
Oh, God. Oh God. Yeah. Oh, please. Yes. Okay. I stand with you on that one. So knowing, okay, you already, since you experienced Martinique as a guest, you already knew that you had to eat with the guests. So again, this is, you were always, I guessing, had an outgoing personality or an extrovert, right? Before you landed in.
I was, yeah.
Okay.
So that was definitely not a problem.
Okay. Did you meet any celebrities, your actors, singers, athletes in either Martinique or Paradise Island?
In Paradise Island, there was a couple of NHL hockey players that I don't really remember.
Okay.
And I remember there was a French, what we call soccer, they call football. And then, but that was about it for Martinique and Paradise Island. In later years, I met some, you know, much more famous people.
Like who?
Brian May of Queen.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
and
sure,
he
yeah.
and Roger Taylor, they came and they were great. I mean, they actually hung out with us.
They yeah, didn't just, I've heard that they went. Yeah, they used to go.
They loved Club Med. They loved Club Med, I think, because it was charter arrivals, which meant that they would stay 3 weeks. And, you know, it would only be once a week that there was the whole novelty of like, oh, my God, Brian May of Queen is here. You know what I mean? People would get over it and kind of leave him be. And he could just be himself. But and he really got into the whole Club Med thing. I mean, he did Palace Night with us. He was a judge for the lip sync contest when some of the geos did Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, wow. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was all about it.
Brian May is a judge when you're doing, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rhapsody. Wow.
And the guy who played him was a circus geo named Mark Gaffney from Ireland. And Mark has an autographed photo of Brian that says, "To the best imitation of me I've ever seen, love Brian."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really cool.
So cool. You know, flash forward a year ago too, and Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, wins all these Oscars. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and wow. Ironically, I ended up staying in touch with Brian and his son, even more so his son, because when I met them, it was in St. Lucia, and his oldest of his three children, Jimmy, was 16. So he was in my teen club. And then we just stayed friends through the years. And I've known geos that have gone to stay in Brian's house in London and, you know, from that season. He's super generous, super kind man.
Are you glad or sad we didn't have social media back then the way it is now?
Thrilled.
Thrilled? Okay, good. most people answer that way that I put that question to. Okay.
Yeah, too much information, stuff that I feel that we got to be a little freer perhaps than, you know, today's generations because of the social media aspect. We didn't have to be so concerned with image that was being, you know, brought out to the rest of the world and judged. Yeah. The rest of the world.
And you really had to work for that photo back then. If you bought a disposable one in the boutique, you really had to crank that thing, you know, to get that next photo. So
exactly. Or you had to be super good friends with the actual village photographers because they cost like more than our salary to get the photos.
Yes. So you're finishing up at Paradise Did you ask for a second season?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I already knew in Paradise I was going to be sent to Playa Blanca as a hostess.
Okay, so you still wanted to remain a hostess?
Yes, at that time, yeah. It was after Playa that I changed.
What are the various jobs that you held after Playa?
Mini club, chief of mini club, yes. Public relations. And then eventually I joined the corporate office and was the human resources lead recruiter for the sports and circus instructors of Club Med North America.
Wow.
You being one of them.
Yes, that's quite the career. So I'm going to ask you this. So yours is a bit tricky because I don't know if you consider Martinique or Paradise Island your first season. Do you consider one your first?
I would say I think Paradise Island is realistically my real first season because I was kind of, although I was paid, I was more au pair-ish in Martinique and I was only there a few weeks. You know, Paradise Island was really the, you know, I remember my roommates, I remember the team, you know, everything about it sort of thing.
So did you find that season in Paradise was magical? And I mean, more so compared to the other ones, like the other ones you might like for a different reason, but do you ever think that there was lightning in a bottle in that season?
It's interesting. No, the lightning in the bottle season for me was a few seasons later in St. Lucia because the team was the best team I've ever worked with.
Who was the chief there?
Howard McCarley.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Howard had the gift of knowing to allow his team to shine and letting them shine.
I heard a story about Howard my first season from that chief. I was wondering if you could confirm to it. They used to do something with him called Operation Howard, where he would go on the beach, or I guess if he would line up geos and they would take cigarette butts out of the sand. Is this true? Did this happen?
Oh, very, very true. Yes, he's very well known for that.
Oh, okay, that's true. Okay.
Yeah, picking up cigarette butts was my least favorite part of working for Howard. But one of my favorite Howard stories is when in years later I was in Sandpiper and Howard was chief of village. And it was changing over from Howard to Ali Iman.
Oh, yes.
And when they change chief of villages, there's always like a big production and they do, you know, passing of the key and all that stuff. So I'm walking through the village and Howard has Ali in his golf cart and he's driving through the village to show Ali Sandpiper. You know, what a beautiful village and et cetera, so on and so forth. And Howard is stopping along the way to pick up garbage and or cigarette butts as he's driving his little golf cart. And Ali Iman is smoking and tosses his cigarette.
Oh,
butt.
Nice.
It was fantastic.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah, I met Ali briefly, so I can just picture that golf cart ride. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Oh, wow. Man, you've entertained me a lot here. This is such a good story that you have. Wow. I really want to thank you for sharing all that with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Are you?
It's always fun to go down memory lane.
Are you able to speak to me about your involvement with Kitchen for Missions? Do you have some time?
Sure, yes. No, thank you. Kitchens for Missions is something that it's a food philanthropy initiative that I co-founded with another ex-GO. Katie McGowan is the one who kind of brought the idea to me. And we came up with it shortly after Chef Anthony Bourdain's death by suicide. And we saw how affected people in the hospitality industry and the culinary world were affected by this chef's passing. And most of them, you know, 99.9% of them had never met the guy, right? They were devastated. And so we started to kind of look at that and look at what mental health and addictions looks like in the hospitality industry and how there's not really a whole lot of support for them surrounding that and how 80% of people in hospitality have suffered mental health and or addictions problems at some point in their career. And that's a high number. So we started Kitchens for Missions. We did the first event in Victoria, British Columbia in 2018. And then the second event in St. John's here in St. John's, Newfoundland, 2019. And of course the pandemic hit. But since then I have been working with other organizations and we provide mental health resources and raise funds and awareness for mental health and addictions programs. Like in Montreal, for example, Remise en Place, which is from the Joe Beef Group. And that they help hospitality or restaurant industry workers with alcoholism and getting them on a sober path. So we kind of work with those organizations and hope to do a lot more in 2021 and 2022 when the world opens back up to tourism and hospitality.
That's amazing. Wow. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Also being a fellow Montrealer, yeah, very, very proud. And later on, I'll be attaching some text to the description if you so people can check it out.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you. Thanks for sharing your story with us about your first season, because been incredible. It's going to be hard to beat this one. So no idea who my next guest
sure
is.
There are many stories.
Pressure's on. I don't know. This is, that plane ticket ripping thing was pretty good.
Yeah, I have to say I couldn't have written that if I tried. And it's at a reunion in Montreal, God, I think that was 2010. There was a reunion at the pub crawl that I organized. I want to say you were there.
Yes, I was there. Yes.
Yeah, and Pierre was there.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and Pierre was, you know, basically commanding the bar and retelling that story 100 times to anybody who would listen about how he ripped my plane ticket.
Well, that's truly a unique move, because I've, you know, don't know anyone who else who could probably get away with that too, you know, without getting punched. So,
okay. Yeah, I was too young and naive to know better. I think if you'd done that to me today, it would have been a different
yeah,
story.
Yeah. Yeah. Considering, yeah, how difficult it is to travel now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, GA, I can't thank you enough for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. And this has meant a lot to me that you agreed to do it. So I really want to thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was fun. This was great.
Any last words?
You know, if you're a young person listening to this and thinking about going to Club Med, it's changed drastically, but it's still worth it. My nephew was a Club Med GO, bar GO in Terps prior to the pandemic hitting, and he loved it. So it's still an amazing experience. I encourage everyone to do it and just enjoy life, you know, live life to the lees. They say life as it should be is what we used to say.
Yes. And that is the perfect way to end it, because I cannot improve on what you just said. So everyone, that was the one, the only GA, and we'll see you next time. Bye.